Welcome to Rewilding Love. This season is with a couple on the brink of divorce.
This is episode 7, Mateo's insight around his bias.
I may have just made the biggest mistake of my life.
I don't understand where things went wrong.
In any given moment, his vibe just changes. And it's like, boom, like you hate me all of a sudden.
It's a ride at a fun fair. We go up and down. We are in up mood and we love each other. And we go into a low mood and we hate each other.
See, for the most part, I'm Pirates of the Caribbean where there's only one drop and one rise. Okay? Everything else is pretty f***ing flat in my life.
Right.
Hers, it's corkscrewing. It jumps the track sometimes. Like, it does crazy shit.
I'm not this monster.
We want her to decide what to do about the relationship when she's on stable ground. I'm not saying that she would need to stay with him.
And you just walked in the house and everything was cool and chill?
Yeah, everything was cool and chill.
It's like borderline psychotic.
What if we could somehow find a way to make you poke-proof?
I'd just rather not get poked.
The emotion that came up yesterday that was really heartfelt, that's who you are. That's your innate natural state. That's how you want to connect with this world. That's the sweet spot. The rest is just stuff we make up.
That was good. Some deep shit. Yeah.
You are listening to Rewilding Love with me, Angus Ross.
And me, Rohini Ross.
Rewilding Love is a podcast about relationships.
We believe that love never disappears completely in relationships. It can always be rewilded. Listen in as we guide a real couple back to their natural state of love.
Relax and enjoy the show.
I feel badly now that I said that you pulled the short straw with Mateo, because in this session he really let go of his defensiveness and opened up and saw some really great things.
Yeah, no, I'm so proud of him. I'm so impressed with how he became so open to this whole experience and became really quite vulnerable. So yeah, you spoke out of turn.
I did.
It's one thing that was occurring to me this morning when I was thinking about you was that. Because, you know, and it's kind of cool that you bring up the awkwardness issue, because it's kind of, I wonder, and I'm just curious about this, I'm not suggesting this is what's going through your mind with deference to separate realities, you know, you might have a completely different feel for what's going on, but there's that sort of, I kind of got a sense yesterday that there's a sort of self-created limbo that you've created in this relationship, in the sense that I know that you talked about that, you know, you had the divorce papers, what was it, September?
Yeah.
And those are kind of like been in the background, they're on the back burner in a way.
Yeah.
So that for me was a kind of a bit of a red flag for the relationship, just because I'm like, wow, I wonder what it would be like to be the other party who's kind of like having to sort of walk around on eggshells. That would just be my spin on that.
I would feel
like that's what I would feel like. If I felt like Rohini had like had divorce papers and we're just like, well, we'll keep things as they are, but we'll see how they go.
Yeah.
I would really not like
that. Yeah, I bet.
That would be really awful for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, yeah.
Totally screwed the pooch in that, but... At the same time, it's kind of like I said, poking the Buddha, right? So the Buddha is going to be super calm and neutral, but after a while, you keep poking the guy, he might tell you blunt honesty, and that's what occurred in our relationship. Is, you know, I kept on getting poked, and it's just like, you know, I'm here in this straitjacket, not feeling well, right, and feeling lonely, and then. Out of outburst to get out of the shackles or whatever you want to call it, it was, this is how I feel.
Yeah.
I'm releasing myself. This is how I feel. I'm hoping that you can interpret this information the way that I hope, which is probably not reasonable to be like, someone tells you like, oh, I want a divorce. And you're like, oh my God, I'm totally going to be, you know, this dream person for them. That was probably what my hope was, the best case scenario, but that's not real life. So yeah, I know that place a larger burden on the relationship.
Yeah. With a relationship, you're all in until you're out, in a sense. Because that's kind of like, okay, you could bring up the idea of divorce and you could have papers, and that's very much in pretty much concrete terms. But it's kind of like, even now within that situation, you could be all in until you're out. So when I say all in, you could be at least all in with the same level of vulnerability, or with a level of vulnerability that wants to sort of, like, there's a, you know, you've actually told me that you want, you know, it would be amazing if we could figure this out. And you kind of want that. There's a part of you that wants that. I don't know how much of you wants that, but I get a sense there is a part of you that wants that. So if you do that, then what have you got to lose then by being all in terms of how you show up and how you present yourself, but in a true and honest and vulnerable way? In terms of you being all in and you show up and you're totally your honest, vulnerable self without the defenses up, and the defenses are all about, you know, I don't want to get hurt in this scenario. Mm-hmm. But based on what I spent a long time yesterday trying to point out, this idea that you can't be hurt by her. Only you can hurt yourself. It's only your thinking that's hurting yourself in this situation.
Right.
I know that's like a really major thing to get a hold of, because I went through it. All the people I know have got into this understanding. They have to get through that big problem of flipping that around.
Yeah.
But she can't hurt you. Only you can create your own mental suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing to get flipped around. But if you can show up and just be yourself without the defenses, because that must be quite exhausting to have to keep those defenses up all the time, I imagine.
Yeah.
It must be a burden to carry.
For both of us.
For both of you, definitely.
Right.
So what... And you might not stay together. You might get divorced. But what have you got to lose in the sense of like, yeah, I can show up and I'm just going to be my vulnerable self. I'm going to put all my chips on the table. This is who I am, and this is how I'm showing up. If that's not going to work, and if that's not going to work where I'm being my authentic, vulnerable self, then yeah, then maybe then you're not right for each other.
So, you know, when you're listening to podcasts,
yes.
Too bad you're not on video right now. So when you're listening to podcasts and they say, we'll be back in a moment.
I do know that.
They usually play some kind of ad.
Yes.
Well, I think we should take a pause from Alicia Mateo for a moment.
Really? Why?
Because I think we should talk a little bit about...
Have I done something wrong?
I think we should talk a little bit about the process of making the podcast.
Okay.
Because it may sound like fun and games when people are listening in, listening in, but sometimes it's far from that.
Yes, sometimes it's very far from that.
And I thought it would be good for listeners to know that, you know, just know more about what our process is.
Okay. Are you going to lead with this example?
No, I was going to ask you to share about your difficulties with it, because you seem to be more challenged than I am.
Yeah, sometimes it feels like pulling teeth. I think, but part of it is that we do it at the end of the week generally. Well, Friday seems to be my worst day to do it, because I tend to feel a little fried on Fridays. Mondays are better because I feel well rested after the Sabbath.
That's not true. On Mondays, you say, oh, I ate too much chocolate over the weekend. Oh, I don't feel good.
I have to have some joy in life.
But you often say on Monday, oh, I ate too much.
I do feel like crap on a Monday generally. So it probably doesn't go well on a Monday either. No, I think that I feel sometimes I feel... like, I just don't know. It's just, it's. I don't know why. I don't have a bit of a block around it. It's one thing to sort of sit down and have a conversation with someone in a, I don't know, in a living room or a bar. Not that I frequent bars per se. But it's another thing to sort of like be facing someone else with a mic stuffed in my mush.
And someone else meaning me.
Yes, meaning you. And then to have this sort of deeper, meaningful conversation when you're feeling like you'd rather be doing something else. But I, you know, I want to have that deeper, meaningful conversation. And I guess there's a certain amount of pressure around it too, because I feel like there are times when I can be listening to you and you're saying something really insightful. Now, without the mic or the recording, I would just be able to appreciate you saying something meaningful and insightful. But sometimes when you say something meaningful and insightful and you've taken 10 minutes to do it, I'm like, oh God, she's saying something really meaningful and insightful. I need to have a really good response. And then when I start to have those thoughts, obviously I'm not listening to what you're saying. And so I might have missed 5 minutes of the meaningful and insightful because I've had to listen to 5 minutes of like, wow, that's really cool. And then there's another 5 minutes. Oh, shit, what do I say now? And if I say the wrong thing, it's like, oh, no, that's all going to go up in smoke and we're going to have to go back to square one. But I guess we do have the luxury of maybe, you know, maybe doing some creative editing, which maybe we're going to have to explore more. So I don't have to feel under so much pressure.
I don't think I've ever talked for 10 minutes straight.
Oh, I don't know. I think you'd be surprised.
Certainly not saying something. I think,
you know, you're having such a good time that time just, you know, flies by.
Or maybe it just feels like that long in your mind.
I don't know. Maybe. But yeah, no, I think that's kind of really what I'm up against is that I feel under, I don't know, I put myself under all this pressure. To sort of show up and sound half decent.
Well, I also think that we are being required to dig deeper in terms of our own understanding doing this podcast in terms of our relationship.
Yeah, no, it's kind of like this is sort of parallel sort of lesson going on.
Are you going to serve me with divorce papers?
No, I guess because I'm all in. I better not. And that's the other thing. I have to worry about talking too loud because then I might, you know, go an octave too loud and then upset the whole recording.
It would upset our sound engineer.
Yeah, our sound engineer wouldn't like that. So all these things to be mindful of. I feel like constrained. I feel like I'm in this little room with rubber walls. Not rubber walls. What are they? What is it exactly?
I don't know. It's some kind of sound protection. Sound. I don't know. What is it? Sound.
It's made of foam. I guess it is foam. It's grey foam. I feel encased, contained, constrained. It's not the ideal setup to be Angus.
Having to sit still.
Exactly. Having to sit still and stare at my wife and look like I'm paying attention. It's too much pressure.
So why are you doing it?
Well, I like doing it. I like it when it works and listening back to it. I like the idea of a podcast. I don't know, it's just, and obviously, ultimately, it's hopefully providing a service. You know, people are going to be able to derive some value of this experience that we've had. And hopefully, you know, we're going to be able to garnish it with some valuable teaching points. So yeah, on that level, I think it's a worthwhile thing to do. I don't know, I have struggled with the doing. But I've enjoyed the completion process.
Well, I just wanted people to know a little bit about the behind the scenes, that it's not all, as what would Alicia say, rainbows and unicorns?
Yes, it's not all fun and games.
That's right.
That's what I would say.
And it does feel like a worthy cause, so we do hope that it's enjoyable for people.
Yeah, it is. It does feel like a worthy cause and a good service, hopefully, to humanity on some level. And that will remain my compass point.
So shall we resume now?
Yes.
Well, back to the section that we just listened to. I don't know if Mateo realizes it, but it really seems as if he's painted himself into this corner by threatening to serve the divorce papers to Alicia. You're looking at me very quizzically.
How do you paint yourself into a corner?
Isn't that a saying?
Paint yourself into a corner?
I think it is a saying.
It can't be.
It is.
It's a tricky, very surprising visual for me to behold.
It's a tricky situation where you make a mistake and paint yourself into a corner because you can't get out.
Well, where would that have come from? Paint yourself into a corner.
Some painter. I don't know. I've heard it.
It just seems an unlikely thing for someone to do.
Well, it's not a good thing to do.
I guess not. There may be more, I don't know. It just conjures up an unusual image, but I'll go with that.
I'll look it up, but I'm sure it's a saying.
It's like some sort of thing that decorators live in fear of.
I think so.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean, though?
Yes, he painted himself into a corner.
And he's made this, you know, very strong threat. And it's not helping rapport in the relationship. It's not improving the relationship. And yet it's on the table. So what else is he going to do?
Yeah, he's painted himself into a corner.
See, it's a good expression.
It is, maybe. Yeah, I mean, it's not, this is far from ideal, let's say. and Alicia must certainly feel like she's walking around on eggshells. But there was a little light at the end of the tunnel. I guess that my line of, I wouldn't say a line of question, well, a line of questioning, the line of inquiry, as it were, was to try and sort of cajole him into putting himself in her shoes, which I think he got to that point. And I did notice quite a good degree of compassion come up in the cadence of his voice. So I thought that was quite heartening.
Yeah, he definitely seemed to have some insight. And the other piece that I thought was really important that you were emphasizing that I think is a really great point, not just for this couple, but for couples in general, is the recognition that it's actually easier to be all in a relationship than it is to be one foot out the door.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if I am to reflect on that, I would say that it must take an enormous amount of bandwidth to keep one foot out the door, because you've got to sort of maintain this stance. You know, for him, it's a case of like, you know, I'm going to wait around for Alicia to change and then we'll be all good. And she's got to tiptoe around, you know, making sure that she doesn't make the wrong move. But I imagine, you know, for couples thinking in those terms, it's kind of like, yeah, they're going to not be able to be present in the relationship because they're going to be thinking about how to, you know, make this all work, or how this isn't working, and how, you know, what is my escape plan if it doesn't? And that must take up an enormous amount of bandwidth. So how do you be present, and how do you, you know, be vulnerable, or how do you really be able to look for the good in the relationship when you're, you know, when you're using all your creativity apps to look, you know, in a sense, by trying to, you know, figure out your exit plan.
Yeah, and I can speak to that firsthand in terms of our relationship. There were many years when we were...
Oh, really?
I think you knew about this already. But where I was really working way harder than I realized I needed to, because my natural inclination and desire was to be all in and to have a relationship that I could be open and vulnerable and intimate with. But because of my own fear of intimacy and my own feelings of fragility, that I wouldn't be able to handle what might come up in our relationship, by sort of keeping that door open or one foot out the door, it took a lot of effort and wasn't going with the natural impulse of what I really wanted to do.
Right. So if you weren't painting yourself into a corner in that situation, what would you be? If you were a decorator trying to figure out an escape plan, what would you be doing? Digging a hole in the floor, knocking out some drywall?
I would have been climbing out the window on the fifth floor, trying, and then realizing, oh, I don't want to go down there.
Maybe you could parasail or something out of there.
Well, no, I wanted to be all in.
Okay, yeah, you did. Thank you.
Well, in the next section that we're going to listen to, I really, really love what you did with Mateo in terms of opening up his eyes to bias that he wasn't even aware of.
Yeah, let's see how that unfolds. You're kind of a little bit hot.
Are you talking about my looks?
Well, your looks and also your volume.
At the moment, it seems like you're kind of like, you've got your defenses up and she's wanting to, like, you know, get in there and figure out what's going on. But if you're not present for her in that way, and it goes both ways, you know, we kind of like put our barriers, we have our own inimitable ways of putting those barriers up. I mean, it sounds like you're more inclined to sort of shut down and not want to, like, interact. She wants to interact because she wants to find out what's going on.
Like overly offensive.
Yes.
Like offensive, not yes. offensive.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you've basically, I don't think you've got anything to lose just by, like, you know, saying what's on your mind, but just having that sort of idea in your head that, yeah, it's better if I deliver this information neutrally rather than it's kind of like I'm just throwing a bomb here and then I'm going to walk away.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a thing that I have to learn, though, too, is, like, what is the difference between what I perceive as a neutral way and then also what's the difference between, hey, I'm being poked, how much more neutral can I be rather than just giving this person the bomb that they're asking for?
Yeah. What if we could somehow find a way to make you poke-proof?
That would be sweet.
Like, she could have her moments of crazy, mm-hmm. which we all have our moments of crazy.
Absolutely.
Maybe her crazy is a little bit more developed than others. I don't know. That's not for me to say. But what if we could figure out a way where you didn't have to take any of that personally? You can be poke resistant, but also have there's a sense of freedom in your head going on in your head at the same time.
I'd just rather not get poked. Like, that's the thing.
I know, but it's because you're taking it personally. And I know, and I understand. I can see, you know, where you're coming from is like, you don't want that to be your home environment. But it's basically, it's all of this is going on in your own head. It's all stuff that you're creating your own suffering.
It's relentless.
It's relentless.
What happened this morning? It was, I'm drinking coffee on the balcony, and she's on her phone looking at Instagram. Oh my God, I love Napa. Wouldn't you like to go to Napa? That was number one. This morning. Okay.
Okay.
That's not like that happened last week or 4 days ago. No, that was this morning.
Okay. Well, that's an innocent comment.
Sure. But after receiving that quote unquote innocent comment a million times and knowing that many of the times that question, maybe different location, different scenario is being asked, there's a background question which is going on.
But is that all that she said? Did it then go in the usual trajectory that you just outlined about?
So today it was, I just said, yeah, I'd love to go to Napa again.
Okay.
Right? And the conversation just ceased.
Okay.
So yeah, there was a unicorn this morning. I want everything to roll smoothly, and I want to know that when I'm having these conversations with my partner, there's no underlying real deep question that they're trying to get answers to, which right. is a lot of the time, right? And it occurs many times where it's like, what do you think about this? Or where do you want to go do this, right? And it's one of the scenarios that I'm saying. And like I said, I put up walls and I'm just like, no.
So for this morning, she made what could be interpreted, you know, if we were a fly on the wall and we're not privy to all the other
BS, yeah,
in the past. And she makes this innocent remark, and then you immediately go into sort of almost like that Pavlovian response of like, yes, this is the narrative that I'm familiar with, and I have my narrative that lines up with that. And so what, you know, what our hope for this weekend was that is for you to show up with an open mind. So in a sense, that is a very narrow focus. We're really like asking you to like, is to sort of widen the shot and look at the whole picture.
Yeah.
And have an open heart. So it almost reminds me of there's a commercial that I saw, I was reminded of the other day, years ago in England. It's like, it's so old, it's in black and white, but it was a really cool commercial. And it was for a newspaper. And there are three different shots, and it's talking about perspective. So the first shot is a close-up of this skinhead running towards this guy with a briefcase. And he comes up with the guy with the briefcase, and he's like, "Piece of like this." And then the next shot is of a guy who's walking down the end of the street. It's a little bit wider. And he sees the skinhead running towards this guy, and the guy puts up his briefcase, and this guy starts running towards him because he thinks obviously the guy's going to get mugged or something. And then the wide shot is like scaffolding falling down and is about to crush this guy, and the skinhead actually saves this guy's life. Mm. So it's kind of like there is a parallel for me, because if we have our narrow focus, like you have obviously a formidable intellect. There's no doubt in my mind that you have a very, very powerful intellect. But the intellect is all about figuring things out, creating stories, like using all the data that we have stored away here as reference points for how things are going to unfold. Mm-hmm. So this morning, that's what was going on. You're in your intellect, you figured out the story, you know this pattern of behavior, it all makes sense. But that's a narrow perspective as far as your relationship is concerned. Your relationship has got so much potential just because you have the full scope and the power of the intelligence behind life at your service at any given moment to give you a fresh new thought, a fresh new perspective.
Yeah, I understand. And I do see that by approaching every situation with the same story in my head doesn't allow for growth in our relationship and growth within myself or herself.
You, in with your formidable intellect, have pigeonholed her mm-hmm. in a way that, okay, I understand this animal now. That's probably not the right term. I understand human now. This is who she is. I've completely figured her out. And there's really no wiggle room. I filed it away. She can change, and if she changes, we'll be good. But it's kind of like, that's who she is at the moment, and I'm not really seeing any different. But this morning, that could have just been, you know, I could make random comments, probably sound nuts. But in the moment, it's kind of like, yeah, I'd like to go to Napa and drink wine.
Yeah.
That might be how I wake up today. But you've made it something so much more.
Yeah, I have. But I've also been Pavlov's dog, conditioned to think that way.
Yes.
Right? So it's not just by my own accord I came up with this in my head.
The thing is, that's not who you are. You're not Pavlov's dog. You're not that hard drive of information. You're so much more than that. Like that, the emotion that came up yesterday that was really heartfelt, that's who you are. That's your innate natural state as a human being. That's who you are. That's how you want to connect with this world. That's the sweet spot. The rest is just stuff we make up.
I just love where you got to in this section with Mateo. I especially love, I don't know if you noticed it, but there was that, for him, a fairly long pause after you talked about how he had developed this narrow perspective on his relationship. And that he wasn't seeing the potential because he was so caught up in his condition thinking about it. And then there was this pause and he finally says, I understand. I see by approaching every situation with the same story in my head, it doesn't allow for my growth in the relationship or the relationship to grow or something like that. I mean, to me, that was him seeing something pretty profound.
Yeah, that was really quite a beautiful moment. And to be honest, I think I'd forgotten about that. it would appear that he did really see something there, and that there was this long pause as the penny dropped. And I was actually, you know, listening to that back, you know, when I was hopping on about the intelligence behind life and that you're so much more than the narrative that you've created in your conceptual mind. I was kind of anticipating, you know, I didn't know what to expect. I was just thinking, is that going to really resonate with him? And I don't know if that gave him cause to pause. Cause to pause? Is that what you would say? But I'm saying it anyway. If that would give him cause to pause, whatever came out of that created a level of reflection that allowed him to see something differently, you know, which I thought was really refreshing.
Yeah, and what led up to that, I think, you know, from what I hear when I listen to that, like the cognitive dissonance between you and him, because he goes from saying, you know, she's relentless, it's relentless. And he's like, just this morning, you won't believe it. It was crazy. Like, and I'm like, oh my goodness, what happened this morning? And she's like, what was it? I want to go to Napa. Do you want to go?
That's right.
And you were just kind of incredible. Like, is that it?
like, you know, I know I was, but I am sure I was expecting her to say something. I want to kill my mother-in-law.
And so I think that example, and your genuine, like, what? That innocent comment? What are you talking about? I think it really helped him see, like, oh, wait a second here. Because when you really, like, looking at the transcript or listening to that, it's like, what on earth did she do?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess that was the point where he suddenly realizes, you know, I have kind of created this crazy narrative. Bless him. But he has, he's got a really good mind. He's created this really interesting story in which Alicia has very little room to maneuver outside the constructs and constraints that, you know, in his mind, that's her identity now.
Well, in a sense, it doesn't really matter what she does because he's going to see her through that lens.
Yeah, yeah. Although, at some point there was a little glitch in the matrix and he's seen something new.
I would say there's a pretty big glitch.
Yeah, let's hope so.
And then, you know, leading into this next section, it seems like with him being able to sort of let go of that narrative about how annoying she is, how much she bothers him and keeps poking him, like, as that sort of slipped away, he actually, in this next section, I think, gets to kind of a deeper concern that's going on for him.
Oh, awesome. Well, let's see what's cooking.
There are also other scenarios, though, in our relationship where my heart has been very open, and it's very open. And just one thing is, I worked as a valet driver in Laguna Beach, and I was always approached by a lot of homeless people with mental illnesses. I did a lot of volunteer work at the hospitals in high school and before then.
Wow, that's
and
funny.
Have a soft spot for
yeah,
all of that.
That's amazing.
And I get emotional, like I'll cry about stuff like that. And I remember as a kid, we'd go to Mexico and I'd be eating with the family and seeing a kid begging, and I would just break down in tears and I couldn't eat. And I'd pretend to tell my parents, like, oh, I just, you know, I don't feel well. But in my heart, what really was is the pain of seeing this person suffering while I have, quote unquote, everything at my fingertips and I can't do anything for this person, right? Other than, mm-hmm. you know, feed them today. I can't help them further than just in that present moment. So going back to my experience, you know, I dealt with a lot of homeless folks with mental illnesses, and I really developed this soft spot knowing that, you know, a lot of these people, it's not their own choices that have led them to that. I also had a friend in college who kind of, came down with schizophrenia. So I knew that it was possible that their choices didn't lead them to homelessness. So I'm being very open, and the things that she had to say, which is what I brought yesterday, the ignorance, the blatant ignorance, really upsets me, and it gets me disconnected from the ignorance and the person who is spewing the ignorance. So there was times where she's just like, I'm afraid of all homeless people, they're all by choice, they're all criminals. And I'm there thinking, I'm like, wow, I've been touched so many times by someone's story, like, how could you just be so narrow-minded and shut off like that? Like, it's not everyone's choice. Yeah, there's some people out here that made this choice to live this life, but the ones that I've come across, you know, didn't, and they struggle every single day with, you know, the story in their mind, right? And I mean, that sort of thing doesn't allow me to be open. I'm just expressing a different point of view of a soft spot, an open heart, and what I receive is very hard and cold and with some regards calculated. And it's been cemented in their mind that if you're homeless, you're a piece of shit, right? If you're taking a knee, you've got nothing behind you that you're, you know, representing. All you're trying to do is portray negativity. If you think this way about how government is supposed to operate and protect its people, well, you're just an idiot and you're not thinking like, so I'm very open-minded. I can understand, but when there's concrete very strong words used against, you know, less fortunate or people that don't have the ability to have a voice, or those that are expressing a voice to, you know, like with the knee, expressing a voice to, you know, shed light on injustices, and you can't even see that other opinion. That's where the ignorance kind of is a very big turnoff for me. There's been so many times where I actually share my deep feelings and bring me to tears because of, you know, like I mentioned with the poverty, right? And that wasn't, the response that I got wasn't even remotely close to what I was expecting or wanting in the moment. I don't know.
So I listened back to that, that particular section. And, you know, whilst I would agree with, I guess what would be considered as Matteo's fairly liberal stance, I'm kind of curious about how Matteo is getting really hot under the collar about Alicia's judgment and being very narrow-minded. In a sense, we can also say that Matteo is being pretty judgmental and pretty narrow-minded about how Alicia is showing up in this relationship.
Yeah, it's quite the juxtaposition, because it's beautiful to hear how big his heart is and how much he cares and how much compassion he has. But then that's juxtaposed to how cold-hearted he is toward her, which is really curious, just like you're saying. And it's a blind spot for him, because he's judging her for being cold-hearted, yet his behavior and his actions toward her are very much unloving and uncaring. You know, again, not probably meaning to be, but that's how he's showing up. And then in this next section that we're going to listen to, you really point him again to the value of being all in, and how, if anything's going to change, that needs to be a shift inside of him in order to really support there being change in the relationship. And I think that there's a connection between his judgment and his not being all in the sense that it's a coping mechanism to prevent him from being at risk for getting hurt. It's a way that he can be in the relationship but not be vulnerable in the relationship and not be at risk.
Ooh, the plot thickens. Let's have a listen.
This situation at the moment is almost like, the analogy I can think of is like, you're in a spacecraft, your relationship's a spacecraft, you've gone into the decompression chamber to wait to get into the evacuation shuttle, and you're in the decompression chamber, and she's in the spacecraft. And it's kind of like, that is the limbo land. And I guess for me, in terms of where I was going this morning, what have you got to lose? I mean, at this point, if you really, if there is a part of you who wants to remain in this relationship, then you kind of like, for my money, you've got to put all your chips on the table. You've got to show up and be your true open-hearted self and see how she responds to that. Based on, hopefully, what we're doing this weekend, it's like if you continue in this vein of being in the decompression chamber, it's going to be, you're kind of damned.
Right.
Damned if you do, damned. You know, it's like you're kind of going to be stuck. I don't really see it going anywhere if you can't get out of that decompression chamber. Maybe the purpose this weekend is for us to help you facilitate an amicable divorce. I don't know. But if you, as you say, feel like there's hope, because it's like you said yesterday, you're a hopeful guy, you can't really continue in this vein. You've got to be yourself. You've got to have that open heart. That's just kind of like, that's how we want to live and operate in this world. Doesn't it feel good to like be in that space when you're helping out a homeless person, despite how she's coming up against you in that situation? That feeling that you have when you help a homeless person, that's so expansive and incredible. And that's kind of like where we want to be in most of the time with our relationship. It's impossible to be in that situation most of the time. But you've got to at least give that a shot.
Yeah. And it's not that...
It's at the moment you've just kind of like created a force field around your heart.
You're right. Absolutely.
And I think it would be really valuable to... If, as you say, you want to approach this weekend with a totally open mind, Mm-hmm. It would be good to at least dip your toe in the water on that front. Because otherwise, it's like, you're just staying in that decompression chamber and you're not really, you're in limbo land, you're not going anywhere.
Well, there is an American saying, which I think is too crude to deliver on the podcast airwaves, but it would, in English terms, go something like this. Evacuate your bowels or get off the WC.
And what do you mean by that?
It means it's like this is now the time to really make a decision one way or the other, and let's move on. And I think that, you know, why are we here if not to make some kind of meaningful decision?
Yeah, I think it was great that you brought up the option, like, are we here to help you guys have an amicable divorce? Like, let's land on one side or the other, rather than being in the, what did you call it? The evacuation chamber. Not the WC evacuation chamber.
I know. No, I didn't mean that at all. Did I say? No, I said the decompression chamber. But we might have to rename our downstairs toilet the evacuation chamber moving forward.
Well, anyway, close enough as far as I'm concerned. But this is a really important point in terms of what's going on in the relationship, that this ambivalence is a reflection of state of mind, and it's actually much easier to have the clarity to go either way. And oftentimes it's really difficult to make a decision because there's a feeling of such high stakes. And I can understand when it comes to a marriage, it does feel like it's high stakes. It's a big decision. But at some point, what you're pointing to here is that at some point, it's too painful to stay in the limbo land and not make a decision.
Yeah, I mean, it is a big decision. And I don't think that really it gives anybody the right to sort of play around with it. You know, I think that he is to an extent playing around with it. And it's, you know, it's causing a lot of suffering for him and Alicia.
Yeah. And it also, to me, this state of limbo is indicative of a way to stay in the relationship without being intimate in the relationship. And, you know, we do have the privilege of some hindsight here, so I'm not going to give too much away. But based on what we know, I can see more now about why this would, on one level, be, even though it doesn't feel good to Mateo, I can see why there's a level of comfort where he still has Alicia in his life, but he's not having to show up in an intimate, vulnerable way.
Yeah, I mean, that would definitely be the impression one would get. It's kind of like he's created a level of safety. And limbo is a very good word to use it. It's kind of really either one way or the other. But he doesn't, you know, he feels like he's kind of keeping himself insulated from harm. But he's kind of suffering in silence.
Yeah. And so we next get to hear another one of your metaphors.
We do. Wonder what that is.
I'm guilty of building this up, you know, all the negative things that I have acknowledged in our relationship, all the negative stuff that has gone on and that I've stored in my mind. It has brought an even stronger narrative into my mind where I dislike a lot of things about her. You know, it literally goes down to the way she drinks water, the sound that it makes, the way that she chews, the way she, her like breath smells, like anything annoys the shit out of me now. And I know that that was built from there. And I know it's not right, right? Like, you know, if I'm going to make this work, I can't allow these things to, you know, really, but like, it makes me so angry. You know, I'm like, I'm sitting on the couch and I hear her eating a chip and it drives me insane. And I think to myself, and I'm like, okay, are you being rational? Like, what if it was someone else on the couch eating a chip? Are you going to react the same way?
Yeah.
And I've come down to it. It's like, no, you wouldn't, because hopefully that other person didn't put you through all the shit this is the person that's currently eating a chip, right, put you through. And I worked on that.
If your state of mind is already negative, your intellect is going to look, it's going to go looking through all the filing systems to try and match up something that has the same quality, if you like, same negative quality. So bad breath, chewing her nails, the way she interrupts, or whatever she does, the numerous things that you can create a laundry list of problems for. It's kind of like, it's like fuel looking for the most inflammable material to grab a hold of. And any one of them can flare up at any moment. But that's how those pathways get developed and become strong. Another analogy for me is like, did I talk about the time tunnel? Did I mention that yesterday?
Mm-mm.
This came out for me a couple of weeks ago. It's almost like I saw, I can't remember what I was looking at. I was looking at someone's blog, and they had some pictures of they had images of neural pathways, and it looked like all these tunnels to me, like, you know, we develop these neural pathways, and then I equated these neural pathways as being like the stories that we, like, you know, create for ourselves. You know, some of them are happy stories, some of them are sad, some of them are actually terrible, but we create these stories and we create these pathways, and then to me they just look like time tunnels, should I say. And then I had this memory or recollection of this show that I used to watch when I was a kid called The Time Tunnel. I don't know if they've remade it. This is like back in the 60s. There was this top secret. It was so hokey, and it would be so crazy to go and look at it now because it's probably so badly produced. But it was this top secret government project. And I think, if a memory serves me right, the government were going to pull the funding, and so the scientists were under the gun to see if it worked or not. So they actually ended up trying to sort of like be a bit reckless about, you know, their pursuit of developing this technology. Anyway, so they would walk into the time tunnel and they'd get sucked into in a point, usually in the past, but it could be the future. And it's kind of like, yeah, that's how our mind works with those neural pathways. There are these really, you know, some of them are really strong, powerful and compelling. We have these stories that we've created over years, and that something happens and our brain is actively looking for some sort of reference point to line up with it. And then we get sucked into the thought process, sucked into the time tunnel. And usually with us as human beings, we get sucked into the past.
Mm-hmm.
And our intuition is like, oh yes, that lines up. We can file that away under, like, you know, being abused as a child, or her picking her nose or whatever it is. And then it just forms these just really strong narratives that are just so hard. They're like a gravitational force pulling us into them.
Yeah.
But it's all made up. It's just something that we had an experience in the moment that we just, like, created a narrative. And a lot of the time there is a very much an illusionary quality to it, but a lot of it is very misguided.
Yeah, absolutely.
Based on our low mood.
Yeah.
So if we start mistrusting our thought process when we're in a low mood, we're definitely going in the right direction.
So you're absolutely right, and she notices it too. We'll be having a fun moment, like, on the couch just laughing, and then all of a sudden she sees my demeanor change. It's because I'm sucked into the, hey, yeah, we're having fun, but fuck, I remember that one time we were having fun and all of a sudden blew up and it was shitty, right? So
right
now I'm gonna shut down.
Yeah.
And yeah, for sure that happens, but how do I remove the association of, you know, something as simple as her breath or the way that she drinks water or the way she, you know, to not really pull me back into a dark place.
Well, where it's the first thing I do,
right, because what happened, I'm sure, is we were in a really pissed off mood. I was bummed out and I heard her drinking water, and that was just one more thing that annoyed me in that moment. So now anytime that she drinks water, I associate that feeling in that moment with the sound of her gulping, right? So how do I disassociate her gulping with that scenario or that memory?
once we get a hold of this understanding, we become better equipped in the moment. I'm not saying that I'm human. I have moments where I just I have my blind spots, completely goes over my head, this understanding. We just get better equipped just to see that, yes, I'm not going to get on board that train because I just know it's going to lead me to rack and ruin, or it's going to lead me towards suffering. It's like that point I made yesterday about the vertigo, the fear of heights. It's like once I kind of had that experience and realized that I don't have to jump on that train, I don't have to go into that time tunnel, then it's kind of like almost like diffuses the situation. Well, it certainly did for me. But then when I had this experience where I was going into my old narrative about how she's a pain in the ass and why did I ever marry her, I thought, oh yeah, I can do the same thing here. And I did. And within minutes, I was like happily walking the dog along the trail. And I'd let go of that, all the story that has that physiology with it.
And you just walked in the house and everything was cool and chill?
Yeah, everything was cool and chill.
It's like borderline psychotic. Right? I mean, come on. It's crazy.
It is crazy. Yeah. It's crazy based on the narrative that you're running.
And it's even crazier if the other person didn't have this come to Jesus moment too and was like, oh yeah, I can forget about this. And then you just walking through the door and
that's
all happy.
That's kind of where we are now. It's like we're not taking our flare-ups personally. We're getting much better at not taking those moments personally. It's just, I'm just taking my thinking. I'm feeling my thinking in the moment. I like had a she did, I can't even know what she did. She did something that pissed me off. My thinking, my time tunnel thinking got activated and I got really upset, and then I just remember, yeah, it's just stuff I made up at some point in my life that, as you know, that is that if I really engage with, I'm gonna that those t- it's just it's going down a rabbit hole that's just gonna, it's never ending, just gets deeper and deeper, and the physiology, the low mood that comes with that, just gets more and more amplified.
Well, it seems like Alicia has become a magnet for Mateo's low moods. But I do really appreciate that he recognizes it's a little crazy for him to be so angry about the sound of her eating a chip or drinking water. So there's definitely some insight there. But I love the comment that you often will say, Angus, about how low moods go looking for something to hang themselves on.
Yeah, it's kind of like low moods, they kind of behave like fire looking for oxygen. They're looking for some inflammable material, or what they believe is the most inflammable material. And in Mateo's mind, Alicia is that inflammable material. He's convinced of that now.
So for all of us, we can recognize that when, you know, I think if we look at our own experience of a low mood, when we're in a low mood, we will look outside of ourselves to try and find the cause of that low mood. We don't often look inside and realize that it's coming from within.
Yeah, and that's the big pivot, isn't it, in this understanding, is that, you know, our old way of being was to, yeah, as you say, look for something else to hang it on, something else or someone else to hang it on. And the intellect really just goes looking for a fall guy. I mean, that's what the intellect does. It's trying to figure out what the hell's going on here. I need a reason to be feeling this way. Oh, lo and behold, it's my nearest and dearest.
And the thing with looking outside of ourselves, when the intellect does that and it finds something to hang it on, it doesn't help us on any level because it makes us a victim to whatever that situation is. So Mateo, in that scenario, is a victim to Alicia eating a chip. He's a victim to her drinking her water. It's really disempowering.
Or the audacious suggestion of going to Napa.
But when we realize that that's what's going on, then we get better at not trying to hang our low mood on something and realize that we just simply can't trust our low mood thinking when it's happening, that whatever those thoughts are running through our mind, and he is recognizing that for himself, which I think is huge. He's recognizing that for him to be enraged by the sound of her eating, like, that doesn't make sense. So he's not trusting his thinking, but there's a whole bunch of other low mood thinking that's going on that he is trusting that hasn't quite reached that threshold of him realizing, oh, I shouldn't be trusting that either.
Yeah, Yeah. And yeah, you know, obviously, ideally, it becomes an indicator of our state of mind. And in this case, it's obviously gone south.
So for everyone, as a general guideline, our feelings let us know when we can trust our thinking, when we can. And when we're feeling negative, when we're feeling badly, it means that our thinking's distorted and we'd be better off not trusting what it's telling us.
Yeah, so when my wife is munching a little too loudly on the corn chips, and I want to go and get out my Smith & Wesson, that might be a suggestion that my mood has gone south and my state of mind is not in a place where I'm going to make the most rational decisions.
Well, for you, it wouldn't be me munching on corn chips. It would be me munching on my cuticles.
Oh, yes, that would be me in that scenario.
In this next section, Mateo is really seeming to grasp what you're saying, but he's in that space of, well, how do I not take it so personally? How do I not get upset? How do I get into this more balanced place? And, you know, as you and I both know, whenever those how questions are present for our clients, it means they haven't seen something clearly enough yet. We can't give them the answer to the how question. They need to see it for themselves.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, isn't it? Because, you know, everybody is going to ask that question. Everybody wants the magic bullet. Everybody wants the how-to and the process and the technique. And I guess they get so get so frustrated asking that question. Eventually, they have to kind of figure it out for themselves. So we just have to sit there and twiddle our thumbs and wait for the penny to drop.
Well, he really saw something here. Let's listen.
Did, yeah.
I do understand. I'm trying to play it in my head how I would handle a situation and get over it, because I do want to get over it. Yeah. I don't want to smell someone's breath and just overcome with this feeling of hatred, right? That's not comfortable for me.
You have to somehow listen beyond the intellect. It sounds kind of crazy, but I guess for me, the best way that I can articulate is it's kind of like you kind of like approach it from here. That's the sort of, in a sort of open-hearted way. Does that make sense to you at all? Does that land in any way?
It does. I'm listening to you, but I'm also processing.
I'm struggling with the point.
No, I'm also I'm just tripping on. Okay, I understand what you're saying, but how do I activate that within me? Because, like I said, I really want this to work. How do I activate that?
See, I don't think you. I don't think we have control over that. It's not like some switch that we can flip. It's kind of like there's a feeling that comes with just sort of dropping into that space.
Have you ever seen... I'm sorry. Have you ever seen... what's that movie called? I don't know. Well, the guy's trying to learn how to surf, right? And they're on the beach, and it's Paul Rudd, and he's trying to teach this guy how to surf. He's like, pop up. No, you're doing too much. And then he's like, do it again. Pop up. You're doing too little. He's like, you know what? Let's just go try it, right? Wait, how? Yeah. I need some sort of guidance on, do I stand up really fast? Do I stand up slow?
Yeah.
Not just like, you know what? Let's just go surfing.
With this understanding is like, you've got to have your own insight. You've got to see it for yourself. You've got to see how to hit that ball. You've got to see how to get up on that surfboard. You have to have your own understanding around it. There's nothing really I can do. I can just, you know, do my best to point you in the right direction.
So it's don't approach a situation with a running mind.
Exactly. Bingo. In terms of how you're showing up in the world, that your state of mind is really important to have an understanding around. So if you're in a low state of mind, life is actually not working very well. But if you're in a more upbeat state of mind, things look better and you're actually more open to insight. And you don't have the narrow-minded quality that comes with having a busy mind. See, the busy mind is just constantly looking for answers and solutions. But those answers and solutions are just all old. That's all old information. The sweet spot is the new information.
I'm super guilty of this, and I'm sure...
Well, you're a mathematician.
Yeah, so I'm sure I've pushed her to to be with, it's really crazy, but like the way that I answer questions probably gets her to think about the way I'm answering a question, and she'll dive into that. And now she's asking me questions really with a reference point that she's trying to get, which bothers me even more. So I have a lot to do with this inconsistency in the emotion in our relationship, for sure. I see it, right? She asked me a question one day, and it could be totally, totally innocent, and I answer it with the side that she's not being innocent with it, right? So now every time she's asking me a question, not from an innocent level, because she's like, well, he spun out on that other time. Like, I want to measure where he's at now, right? So I probably created my own monster.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty amazing insight, observation.
Yeah. I can see that. Yeah. I can link it. Just be like, oh, God, that's my fault. Okay. I see it. So lunchtime? Like, we're at... That was good. Some deep shit. Yeah, I see it. So just be yourself, be in the moment, be cool, don't think.
Obviously, you know, it's hard to not think, you know? we were thinking machines, but more a case of like looking at the state of our mind. Are we in a low state of mind, or are we in an up state of mind? And generally, if we're in a low state of mind, it's because we're kind of like tiring ourselves out up here, mm-hmm. trying to figure things out.
So then it would be also helpful to know, when you're in a conversation with someone, what their state is, whether they're high or low, because that should kind of also dictate how a conversation should go.
Possibly.
Right?
I think it's more a case of just being able to judge what state, you know, we're in when it doesn't really matter what state of mind they're in. If our mind is dipping into a low state, then that's good enough for us to sort of like maybe not engage at that point. But I feel like you've seen something. Do you think this might be a good place to stop?
Yeah, I mean, I understand what the underlying vibe and approach should be, which is open-mindedness and not reverting back to prior outcomes.
Yeah.
Are you blown away? Or am I blown away? You're like, holy shit, yeah, that's good.
It is good. I'm kind of blown away by you. You have a big heart. I mean, that feels very evident to me. Just as I said, in the way that you initially showed up, you're very open. So no, that's kind of like, that's your natural state, that's your essential nature, is to be open. So it's kind of, you know, it kind of breaks my heart to see you with your defenses up.
And it breaks my heart to see her with her defenses up, because she's also leads with her heart.
Yeah.
That's the shitty part, is that I've also cultivated that, walking on eggshells and clothes off and asking me dumbass questions. That's all something that I cultivated, and I see that. Those walls were built up and fortified during those moments because it was a lot easier to do it then, because we were in low moods, right? So we built these walls during a low mood period, and they really got fortified, those channels that you're talking about. So now, even when everything's supposed to be cool, we're still reverting back and getting sucked into that path or that tunnel, that strong, you know, channel. So I do see that. I just hope that, I mean, I think acknowledging it definitely helps everything. I just really hope that I can take this mental process and remind myself of, hey man, like, you're in a low mood right now, probably not good to be you know, talking about this specific thing right now, because you're going to create a really strong channel in a bad time, and it's not going to help you in the future.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
This is one of my favorite segments of this whole podcast so far, because it's just so exciting, heartwarming, thrilling to witness someone having an insight real time. And for Mateo to go from not knowing, asking how, to all of a sudden, like, oh, this is not about the intellect. This is about me not thinking. This is about experiential learning. And then from there to see his thinking more clearly and to recognize, like, oh, all of this bias that I've had running against Alicia, that's my thinking. Like, I've been the one that's reacting from that place. And of course, that's had an impact on the rapport in our relationship and an impact on her. Like, that's what's going on. And his level of responsibility. And, you know, I just loved it.
Yeah, no, it was it's really fun to listen back to that. And I can remember, actually, I feel like when he turns to me at some point because he realized that, you know, that I've seen something in a sense. I think what I started to see in that moment was I could see the compassion that he was having for Alicia, finally. And that was a really beautiful moment. And I loved that surfboard analogy, you know, as a demonstration of, you know, in his mind about how, you know, he has to let the thinking go and he just has to, you know, it is, as you say, it is an experiential learning and he'll figure that out in the moment moving forward.
And that's the rewilding in action. That's letting go of all of that learned conditioning and coming back to what is natural and true to him.
Yeah, absolutely. And that there, you know, the compassion is his essential nature. And that's, you know, it's such a beautiful thing to see.
And that's what happens to all of us. And that's why this journey is so beautiful to witness with people and to be mentors and guides along the way, because it's really about them letting go of learned conditioning that isn't who they are. And they can't let go of it when it's invisible to them, but as soon as they understand that it's there and they see it, then immediately it falls away.
Yeah, and you just see the honesty, and it's so refreshing.
In the next section, Mateo starts to put the dots together in terms of the importance of having an open mind and how that's going to impact really all areas of his life.
Yeah, and I guess also we go over some of the more practical things that he can do to slow down.
The only time that I really unwind is either when I'm cycling or when I'm surfing. Like, I'm really thinking about when do I just release and say, like, fuck it, right? Like, at work, I'm working. I'm definitely calm, but I'm working. When I'm home or playing golf or like hanging out with a friend, we're talking about work or talking about career oriented goals, and right, so that's not true hanging out and just like being one with yourself.
I would say the cycling and the surfing.
Yeah, and then when I'm at home, you know, unwinding, you know, smoking a joint and sitting on the couch and watching TV isn't the kind of fulfilling.
That's kind of checking out.
Yeah, so the surfing and the cycling is definitely huge, but the problem is I haven't done either in a long time. Like, I used to surf all the time with my friends, but no one lives in the area and I'm petrified of sharks, so I don't go in the water by myself because I'm not stupid, right? It's better to bring people with you to the water than go alone. It increases your chance of survival. That's my mentality. And the cycling, I haven't done it. I moved away from where it was very easy to, you know, get lost in the cow pastures, and they had really cool roads where you could just ride forever.
What I was getting at is that, you know, it's important to just see the value in giving the intellect a break, and that's one way that I'm sure that you do it, through the cycling, through the surfing. And once you get eyes for that, you can see how that when you come home from work, your intellect's still like, you know, trying to process what's going on.
Yeah.
And that's not valuable at all within the context of a relationship if you can identify that this state of mind is not conducive to a healthy connection at this point in time.
It usually takes me like 3 hours by the time I get home to be able to have the ability to even sleep. I just need to just chill out. Please don't ask me so many questions, and I just need to like hang out. But that's again, that's a story that I've also created in my mind, right? I put that burden on myself by approaching my home life with that thought process.
Yeah.
So I do have some things that I probably should be doing more, which I would join like a surf group or something. But those are really the moments of like meditation for myself to be able to really like clear my mind. I know that I've been missing some sort of meditation and some inner peace within me, and and it frustrates me about the surfing thing, because that was such a big part of my life. Even though I'm not good at all, I'll go on the record and say that I'm not good at surfing. I just liked paddling out there and just being in the ocean.
Well, that sounds like, you know, your wisdom telling you that this is something that is important to do. Because, you know, we can't really just run up, you know, we can't run on our intellect the whole time. Because it's just going to, we're going to burn out eventually. And the burnout probably is in the relation. I don't know to what degree that's responsible, but I would say that if you're constantly, the machinery is constantly running, it's just going to, it's going to be exhausting.
Yeah.
You just need to have time and space to just like unwind.
Yeah.
And then that's in those moments, that's when, you know, fresh thought comes in. You kind of pull back, you see the wider picture.
Yeah.
You're not narrow focused.
Yeah.
The meditation point is the wider perspective.
And it's crazy because that's exactly how I felt when I would go on a ride. I'd feel so enlightened when I got back. And when she and I first got together, I was in that headspace of just information just coming to me, and I wasn't overthinking anything. And now it's become, you're right, I let information come to me, but I learn from it very quickly, and then I don't let any more information come to me from that source, because I already have it played out how it works.
Right.
So
now you, but do you see the value is like there's infinite possibilities coming from that space.
Yeah.
Rather than like, oh, I've got this bit of information, I'll store this away and figure things out from there. It's like, whoa, but there's so much more. And in a sense, there's so much more in terms of how you will deal with your relationship. Mm-hmm. You can look at your relationship from that point of view. I've kind of taken this information, figured things out, and now I understand my relationship. But in actual fact, my relationship has got no end of possibilities.
Yeah. Yeah, now it's like I feel kind of awkward. It's like, is there an apology deserving on my end? You know, how is that supposed to work? Because I see where I've fallen short. Now it's like a fucking guilt thing. It's like, okay, well, apologize?
You have to follow your own wisdom on that. I can't. It would be inappropriate for me to guide you in the sense that you have a really big heart and you just got to trust it and follow it.
Yeah.
Because it's really, I mean, it's beautiful to see, for me, just to witness anybody who drops into that space. When you dropped into that space yesterday, that was phenomenal. When you dropped into that space when we arrived, like, here's a guy who's, like, really open, like, doesn't really have much, you know, running on, you know, what it means to, like, you know, embrace another human being. It's just, like, you'll be guided by your own wisdom on that. And the wisdom's not really coming up from the old information. The wisdom's coming from here. And the more you trust here, like, you're better off. We're all, you know, me too. The more we trust this space. And I use the heart because it's kind of emblematic of being open. That's where the gold is, whether that's in a relationship with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like you having that sentiment towards a homeless person, that's coming from that space. You seeing her essential nature coming from that space. And it's beautiful. I mean, that's really, if we allow that to be our North Star, I feel like we're good to go.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, when you have those moments on your surfboard or on your bike where you're not thinking, that's like, that's fertile ground for the insight to come in. But it becomes a reference point to see, yeah, look what happens when I'm in a relationship that feels like it's starting to break down, whether that's a work relationship or, a personal relationship. It's because the intellect is like constantly running, trying to figure things out.
And it's usually breaking down because you're in a low mood and you're allowing it to take more effect than it would, the weight that you should really be putting on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You get it.
Cool. I think we should stop.
Cool.
I really appreciate how in this segment, Mateo was recognizing the importance of having a relaxed and open mind, and he recognized the activities that fostered that experience for himself, and he saw how he hadn't been allowing himself to do those things that really let his mind unwind and relax.
Yeah, I thought that was brilliant. And I'm sure in the moment, what I thought would have been really brilliant was that we got to this point where he's asking me about formulating an apology. And I must have thought that that must have really provided me with concrete evidence that he's had some kind of meaningful insight. And maybe we're even on the home straight now. We've certainly turned a corner and going in a very positive direction. And I love the fact that that sense of compassion that I recognized in him was probably eliciting this feeling of guilt that, you know, that he was starting to come to terms with about how he's been showing up in the relationship.
Well, you don't want to get too optimistic because you haven't heard my session with Alicia at this point.
Okay.
And we were going in a different direction, shall we say.
Ah, interesting. Oh, okay. Well, I await with bated breath.
But I hear what you're saying in terms of the guilt. Like, for me, that's a wonderful demonstration of how, from one level of understanding, he didn't feel guilty about how he was behaving at all. And then he has this shift in understanding in this session with you, and all of a sudden, from that level of understanding, his conscience kicks in, and he naturally feels a healthy guilt about that. And it's not something that's bad or wrong. It's actually him being more connected with his conscience and more connected with his internal wisdom. And that's guiding him. That's what's saying, hey, maybe there's an apology needed here.
Yeah. And you can sense how the tension has lifted and that he feels, it's the feeling that's just so beautiful. It's like, you know, where we started, where he was really in a place of very deep judgment. That seems to have evaporated to quite an amazing degree.
Yeah, now he also is aware of how he can continue to support himself, how he can allow his mind to relax. It sounds like he has quite a lot of responsibility at work, and he's taken that on, and so he hasn't been practicing self-care in a way that really allows him to decompress.
Yeah, I guess one has to conclude that that's so obvious that he has taken on extra responsibilities and he hasn't been looking after himself in that way.
And I thought it was cool how he recognized when he met Alicia, he was in a completely different state of mind.
Yeah, no, it was excellent.
I guess we'll have to wait for the next episode to see where Alicia's going.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much for listening to Rewilding Love. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know by subscribing on iTunes, and we would love for you to leave a review there.
iTunes reviews will steer people to this podcast who need help with their relationships.
If you would like to learn more about our work and our online rewilding community, please visit our website, therewilders.org.
Thanks for listening. Join us next week.